Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind listener mail. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I am Joe McCormick, and it's Monday, the day of each week that we read back messages from the Stuff to Blow Your Mind email address. If you have never gotten in touch before and you'd like to give it a shot, do give it a shot. This is the time. You can reach out to us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com. We accept mail on all kinds of subjects, whatever you want to send us, but we are especially pleased when we get feedback to recent episodes. And if you have something interesting you'd like to add to a topic we've talked about, get in touch. It is contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com. Let's see. Rob, I think I'm going to kick things off here with this message from Chris in response to our series on cave biology.
All right, let's have it.
Chris says, "Hi, Robert, Joe, and JJ. Really enjoyed the first episode of The Hypogean World and the discussion about the potential for the adaptations that selected for sightlessness and the fact that the one fish you had described does technically still have eyes during development, but then they lose them. Did not realize this. Well, the first thing I see when I open my browser this morning is a suggested story on none other than blind cave salamanders coming to the surface." So the article that Chris links here is from Gizmodo from March 13th, 2024 by Isaac Schultz, and it is called "Scientists Caught Blind Cave Salamanders Sneaking to Earth's Surface." So here's the gist of the story. This concerns recently published research about the Olm, the cave-adapted salamander from the Dinaric Karst of Europe, which we talked about in one of the later parts of the cave series. So it's possible that when Chris sent this email, we hadn't actually published our stuff about Olms yet. So nice coincidence. The Olms are very cool animals because they sort of live life in slow motion. They're thought to sometimes live for a century or more. They can apparently go years at a time without eating. Their cycle of mating and reproduction is very slow. I seem to recall it's maybe like a decade or more in between their breeding cycles. We also discussed a study that found that they can go for years at a time barely moving, maybe moving no more than a few meters from their starting location. And we also talked about how these animals were first observed in village springs hundreds of years ago, leading to these Carniolan peasants believing that they were baby dragons that had been spit up by a big adult dragon underground. And then, of course, came the developing biological understanding that these were subterranean cave-adapted amphibians. And the idea was that, well, when there are heavy rains and there's suddenly a lot of water flowing through these underground waterways, these animals get washed up to the surface in these springs. So they're washed out of their underground homes.
Hmm.
But the researchers who conducted this new study were handling ulms found in springs, in surface springs in eastern Italy, and they found that in some cases when these ulms were handled, they would like vomit up earthworms that they had previously eaten. And these earthworms are not prey that you would find in the subterranean waterways where the ulms are thought to spend most of their lives. You would find them in the soil, on the surface, like up in the epigean world, up above. And they said that many of these surface ulms were, in fact, plump with earthworms. They had been eating very well on the surface here. The researchers also found evidence of ulm activity in these surface springs at a time when there was no preceding weather or water activity that would have been likely to flush them up to the surface against their will. So instead, the researchers say, you know, these ulms are probably adapted to live the vast majority of their lives in these subterranean caverns and the underground waterways, but it seems they sometimes probably make deliberate journeys to the surface, come up to these surface springs to eat and maybe sometimes to breed. So there are like, so you can be mostly adapted to a totally underground, lightless way of living, but for certain types of activities come all the way up to the surface where, you know, it was previously thought that the vulnerabilities of the cave adapted animal on the surface would make that kind of journey very unlikely because, you know, suddenly you're up here and you're vulnerable to predators. You don't normally have to worry about predators in your underground habitat. You might be just generally not well adapted to a place where there's a bunch of light. But it seems like maybe the rewards in some cases make it worth it for the ulm to come up and eat a bunch of earthworms or whatever.
Yeah, they heed that call to adventure, perhaps. but that's fascinating because it does turn some of what we thought we knew about the ulm on its head, you know, concerning their obligate subterranean life, their tendency to stay in just one very small area for the duration of their very long life. So yeah, fascinating information.
I'm trying to think of the equivalent. It would be like if us surface adapted organisms, you know, we live almost our entire lives on the surface, but we know that maybe 500 meters down in the total darkness of a deep cave, there's like a really good buffet. So if we get really hungry, we go down there sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, it's not completely out of keeping with what we know about, you know, some ancient peoples that would have maybe gone to certain caves for sacred purposes, you know, be it some sort of like funeral rite or so forth. So, fascinating to think about.
Anyway, if you want to check out the underlying paper that this Gizmodo article was about, it was published in the journal Ecology 2024 by Minetti et al., and it is called Wandering Outside of the Styx, Surface Activity of an Iconic Subterranean Vertebrate, the Ulm. All right. And to come back to Chris's message, that was the first half. Chris says, thanks again for all the fascinating content. On the subject of caves, I took a family trip last fall to Mammoth Cave National Park in Kentucky. What a great experience. We were lucky enough to be able to take the Dome and Drip Stones tour. And during one part of that tour, they kill the lights and had us in utter darkness, only to be broken 30 seconds later by a single small lighter. It was quite dramatic and a really fun experience. Highly recommend. Regards, Chris.
Awesome. Yeah, yeah. I think we alluded to this sort of experience in the cave, where you can experience this, you know, deep true darkness like this.
Yeah, the one time I've done this, it was in caves in Oregon. It was an incredibly memorable experience.
All right, this next one comes to us from Pav. Pav writes in and says, hello, Joe and Rob. Wanted to drop you a quick note to say how much I enjoyed the recent 4 episodes about the caves. The exploration and mysterious atmosphere really captivated me. I'm hoping that the next Weird House Cinema movie will continue this trend with a cave-themed horror flick. There are so many possibilities to explore in that genre. Looking forward to what's next. Thanks, Pav.
Rob, do you have cave movies in mind?
I mean, we have a few on the list for the potential future that involve caves. I think the one that we did right after the cave special had no caves, and the next one coming up also has no true caves. But I mean, on one hand, I was looking into it. You know, a number of films that we've covered already feature Bronson Canyon and the Bronson Caves in Griffith Park, Los Angeles. These were featured in such films that we've watched as, let's see, The Return from 1980. Let's see, also there was, we haven't done It Conquered the World yet, but that's certainly one that's potentially on the list.
My favorite space artichoke.
Yeah, yeah. The Magic Sword apparently shot some scenes there as well. I don't know if they did the full cave or just sort of that neat canyon environment that often feels like another world. And, Robot Monster, of course. So it's been a favorite spot to either create another planet or to just have a haunting cave in which may lurk a monster or a robot or some sort of combination of robot and monster.
It's a great place to learn too late that man is a feeling creature.
Yeah. But yeah, we have a number of films. Caves pop up in all sorts of fiction and all sorts of genre pictures that we may choose. But offhand, I know that we've talked about potentially covering the Gargoyles movie from the 1970s. 72.
Oh, the made-for-TV one with Bernie Casey.
Yeah, that one prominently features some cave sets, and there are a few other in this genre as well that are on the list. A lot of bat people movies, troglodyte movies, and so forth. I mean, you can get a good cave in there. There's some Paul Naschy films that have some caves that I've batting around in my head. So yeah, we'll definitely get back to some cave flicks on Weird House Cinema.
I can't wait. Okay, another short message. This one comes from Emma in response to previous listener mail that brought up the Encyclopedia Brown book series. I think somebody mentioned it because they found out what ambergris was from reading Encyclopedia Brown books as a kid. Emma says, live from Victoria, British Columbia, Canada, grade 3 classroom. My son doesn't read them, but I instantly thought of you all. And then they attach a picture of a collection of classroom reading material. The very first book in the stack is Encyclopedia Brown's Book of Strange but True Crimes.
Yep, there it is in the bin. I wonder what the strange crimes were. I assume mostly serial murders.
Yeah, what is true crime that's appropriate for children?
I know you're kind of limited to diamond heists and so forth, right?
Yeah. True nonviolent crime.
Yeah. But I mean, no, this is fun. I have no experience with Encyclopedia Brown myself, except I just vaguely remember the title. But that's about it. So I think it's great that people can still connect with this stuff.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today. Health Aid kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Okay, here I think we're going to have to switch over and do some Weird House Cinema messages because we've got a lot of them in the bin. Many people have been writing in, especially about Dune, but about other episodes as well. Maybe we should do all of the Dune messages in a block. And before that, maybe I will read this response from Bruce on the episode that I did with Seth Nicholas Johnson while you were out about the Monkees movie Head.
Oh, yeah. I listened to this episode. I wasn't able to get a hold of the movie at the time because I believe I was traveling. But yeah, I did listen to the episode.
Oh, you should watch it sometime, Rob. I think you'd appreciate it. Bruce says, "Stuff to blow your mind, folks. I wanted to thank you so much for the latest episode of Weird House on Head. I am also a huge Monkees fan, and this movie has always been a favorite of mine to demonstrate how much they were in the middle of the whole 60s experience. For example, something that isn't connected with the movie but shows how much influence the group had on the culture. The character of Chekhov on the original Star Trek, the original TV series, was added in season 2 as a direct result of Davy Jones' popularity." Huh? I had no idea.
We got to get a Russian monkey in there. Okay.
So Bruce says, the thinking was, quote, "We need our own younger international character." Oh, that's right. Because the other three monkeys were American. They were from the United States, but Davy Jones was British. Hmm. And was the cute one and had shaggy hair. But Bruce says, they were thinking, we've got to get our own international character to capture our fair share of the teeny bopper audience. And Bruce says, that's why Chekhov's hair was shaggier than anyone else's. Bruce goes on to say, the real reason I'm writing is to pass along some quotes from the 2017 autobiography of Michael Nesmith called Infinite Tuesday, where he shares firsthand riffs on Head. I was somewhat surprised that the book didn't make it into your narrative, as it has some pretty interesting views. According to Mike, quote, and there are a few substitutions in here for clarity, with the Monkey movie, Bert Schneider and Bob Rafelson had decided to kill the monster they thought they had created, and they asked Jack Nicholson to help. They also asked the four principal cast players, Davy, Mickey, Peter, and me, to participate. At first, I thought the suggestion was simply for the four monkeys to join in on a trip to Ojai and smoke dope, hang out with Bert and Bob and Jack, and race golf carts around the hotel. But no, they were serious about the four of us actually contributing to the screenplay. But then Bruce says, he goes on to say that it didn't work out because, quote, we were not drawn together. And then Bruce says there is a great quote about what Bert Schneider thought about the screenplay. Quote, he, Bert, described it to me, Mike, as a wild gamble. He said he thought it would either be recognized and revered or reviled and unsung. There would be no in between and no ambivalence. Millions would attend or no one would attend. He was right. Then Bruce shares that Mike Nesmith's take on Head is this, quote, drug-addled, bizarre, obtuse, and ignored as it was, the movie still became an actual driving force. Instead of destroying all things monkeys, it emblazoned them on pop culture permanently. Also, an interesting take on the title. One of the parody elements of the film, according to Mike, was that Bob Rafelson wanted to include, quote, all his favorite genres, from westerns to David Lean-type epics, to, quote, the darkest thing on the planet. When Jack asked what that would be, Bob said, Victor Mature's hair. Victor Mature is the old Hollywood actor, sort of dashing leading man with always very well-coiffed hair. And yes, parts of the movie do take place within his hair. And so Bruce explains how, yes, they seized on that moment and they said, yes, that's it, that the movie must take place in Victor Mature's hair. Bruce says, as drug riffs go, it is one of the greats, and it would serve as the magic carpet for the film. The serene fantasy behind the panicked psychedelia. Victor Mature's hair would be Head's, quote, diegesis. And he says Mike follows that with a cool story about how he unwittingly provided the solution to getting Victor Mature to participate. In true Mike Nesmith storytelling brilliance, the incident is hilarious. I would share it here, but it goes on for a number of pages, and I couldn't do Mike justice by condensing it. Find a copy of the book and read it for yourself. Infinite Tuesday is about so much more than the monkeys, though. Mike was such an unrecognized talent, and he doesn't shrink away from as many faults as he tells the story. But that's a subject for another time. Thanks for shedding a spotlight on the seminal film and reminding me why I'm such a fan of these four guys. They truly do transcend pop culture, the 60s, and music. Bruce. Well, thank you, Bruce. Well, yeah, actually, after Seth's recommendation to me in this episode, I did spend the following weekend. I was actually on a road trip, and I listened to a bunch of Mike Nesmith's solo albums. The first one, I think it's called Magnetic South, maybe. But then also Nevada Fighter. There's one called Pretty Much Your Standard Ranch Stash, and I really enjoyed these. They're great. Country rock, much like Graham Parsons or the Flying Burrito Brothers, similar kind of stuff. It was really good.
Very cool. Well, let's go ahead. Let's go ahead and dive into some Dune feedback here.
Oh, boy.
This first one comes to us from Lorenzo. Lorenzo says, "Hi, Rob and Joe. I'm very pleased you are covering Dune, two episodes, no less. I wanted to write to you regarding the sound design of the films of David Lynch, which I've been watching since I was a kid. Joe, you are looking to link Dune to subsequent Lynch films, those soundscapes, that persistent hum that made the air heavy. I would propose that you could hear those films without seeing them. Thanks, Lorenzo."
Oh, Lorenzo. So you're saying that you could almost, you could watch the movie without looking at the screen, just like by the sounds creating the atmosphere and all that?
Yeah, I believe that's what he's saying here. And that seems like a strong case to be made there.
I agree. Yeah, I love those David Lynch sounds. But you've been watching the movies of David Lynch since you were a kid?
Well, I mean, you could start with Dune as a kid, right?
Okay, yeah.
And then branch out into the other things. I think that would be the best way to go.
Yeah.
Like if I were to start my son on David Lynch and I was like really obsessed with getting him literate in David Lynch, like that's where we would start at his age.
Yeah.
And even then I would be like, this is going to be a lot.
I'm just imagining like 8-year-olds watching Eraserhead.
Yeah, no. Not appropriate. Not appropriate.
All right, next one I'm going to do is this message from Steph. Steph says, "Hi, Joe and Rob. I was playing listener mail today and it unlocked a core memory for me. My dad would rent a VCR when HBO had their free preview weekends to record whatever movies he could for free. One of our VHS tapes had the combo of National Lampoon's Vacation, which segued into the first part of Dune. In order to finish Dune, you had to put in another VHS tape, which then segued from the second part of Dune to Muppets Take Manhattan." Amazing. I don't think you could plan a more jarring transition from one style of movie to another. We had about a dozen tapes like that would abruptly change from one genre to another with almost no warning. It was a wild time in home entertainment, but one I remember with such fondness. We eventually bought our very own VCR, so then we always had something cool to watch if we were homesick from school, because a kid could only take so much Price is Right when you weren't feeling well. Always enjoy your shows, but especially love Weird House Cinema. You have introduced me to so many great weird movies and reminded me of others that I had forgotten. When I saw that you were doing a two-parter on the 1984 version of Dune, I let out an audible yes while making dinner that caused my husband to wonder what was going on. Thanks for all you do, Steph."
That's great. I'm glad I'm not the only one who had those tapes with like the three movies taped off of HBO on them. I was thinking a little bit more on this, and I could be wrong about like what each individual tape, you know, contained, but I vaguely remember there being a tape that maybe had Poltergeist, which I was terrified to watch. Mm-hmm. Terrifying film. And I think it's still, the effects hold up. Yeah, not kid appropriate in my opinion. And then it had Raiders of the Lost Ark, which was one of my favorites. And then I think it also had the 1984 Robin Williams drama Moscow on the Hudson, which was not appropriate for children, or even like interesting to children, but it was there.
I had tapes like this as well, not from HBO. I don't recall us ever getting free free trials of HBO or anything. I guess, I don't know, that must have been the thing somewhere else or something. But we didn't have that. We had stuff that was taped off of TV, sometimes with like jarring transitions where I got really good at doing this thing when I was a kid where I would try to hit stop recording during the commercial breaks on the TV things and then start it back up. So it wouldn't, but sometimes you'd miss your cue and then so like part of the movie would be gone. And then sometimes you'd accidentally tape over something. So yeah, my tapes were a mess, but I cherish them nonetheless.
It's crazy looking back on how we use VHS technology at times to try and capture some sort of pristine cut of a film off of a television broadcast. Like it was never going to be like the video quality wasn't going to be good. You probably weren't going to have like the actual theatrical cut to any extent. And it's not like your removal of the advertisements was going to be seamless. And then fast forward till today, those sorts of tapes, they're mostly only interesting if you have the commercial still on there, if you still have you know, studio, not studio, but you know, TV station material on there, things other than the movie, which is going to be in dreadful quality to begin with.
Yeah, and also the way they used to edit things for TV, not just for content, but just for runtime, so there'd just be stuff cut out randomly to, you know, to get it down to fit. Nothing's in the original aspect ratio.
Yeah,
it's hilarious.
Yeah, except in rare exceptions where you have films that have never come out in better quality. And there are still those out there for sure.
Let's see. Rob, do you mind if I do this last message from Constantinos here?
Oh, yes, do.
Constantino says, so apropos of nothing in particular, here is a 2010 Fatboy Slim video of Christopher Walken dancing to the song Weapon of Choice. Note the lyrics at about 2 minutes into the song. The lyrics are, walk without rhythm, it won't attract the worm. And it just keeps repeating that until finally it says, if you walk without rhythm, you never learn. Just a little note, I don't think I realized this until I looked the song up, but the vocals on this song are by Bootsy Collins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they're altered a little bit, but yeah, that's Bootsy in there.
But this is a classic Fatboy Slim video directed by Spike Jonze, I believe, with Christopher Walken dancing. And Christopher Walken, of course, was a dancer, so, you know, he can handle it.
Yeah. You also see him dancing in Pennies from Heaven, I believe. He dances in that film as well.
I've never seen it.
Oh, it's pretty good as I recall. Been a while. But yeah, he definitely cuts a rug in this Fatboy Slim video. I do vividly remember it when it first debuted on MTV. And it's a great track as well. I mean, Fatboy Slim had some really good hits. His album Better Living Through Chemistry from 1996 was pretty phenomenal.
Anyway, coming back to Constantinos's message, I'm pretty sure that this is video evidence that Christopher Walken manifested the newest Dune movie just by sheer force of will. Or can you just believe it is a happy coincidence that this man happened to be cast in Dune a decade after this wonderful jazz samba fusion dance ode to Shai Hulud, because there is no Illuminati and birds are real. just trying to keep Dune weird. Thank you for a fun edition of Weird House Cinema. Now do the series. Constantinos includes a link and says regards. Well, thank you very much for the message. And thank you for giving me an excuse to watch this video again. I really enjoyed it. And I truly don't think I'd ever noticed the quote from Dune in it before.
Oh, yeah. Walk without rhythm so you don't attract the worm. Yeah. Apparently someone asked him about this in a recent interview and he said that he never realized there was a Dune connection in it until he was cast in the recent Dune Part 2 film. And then someone pointed it out to him.
Must be magic.
Yeah, but absolutely great track. Still holds up. Great music video.
Okay. Should we wrap it up there?
Yeah, let's go ahead and wrap it up. But we'd love to hear from everyone out there. If you have more thoughts about Dune, if you have thoughts about any past, current, and potential future episodes of Weird House Cinema, Stuff to Blow Your Mind core episodes, of course. Also, any of our Wednesday episodes, Animalia Stupendium, the monster fact, the artifact. Just hit us up. We'd love to hear from you. Just a reminder that if you haven't rated and reviewed the show, wherever you get the show, or go and do that. That helps us out in the long run. And you can find us on most social media places where whatever you're using, look us up. We're probably there. You can also find our Discord server. If you need a link for that, just email us and we'll send it to you. If you use the Facebook, there's a Facebook group called the Stuff to Blow Your Mind discussion module. You can join there as well. In both places, you can interact with other listeners to the show.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, JJ Posway. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful fingersticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch, so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take control of your diabetes with the number one recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.